Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the every other week Tuesday night open call. We're working to get our moderators together here. Everybody seems to be a little slow on the ball tonight on getting into the board. But we'll give everybody a couple minutes here. Jesse, of course, is not going to be with us tonight. As far as I know, he's on a plane somewhere between China and the United States right about now. He went to China. He was going to be there for 11 days. He's supposed to be back on the 17th, which, of course, is tomorrow. And I don't know what the timing is exactly on it, but he'll be coming back, and I'm sure he'll have some interesting things to tell us about when he was able to spend, you know, about a week and a half in China. And I don't know what all he was going to be doing over there. It was a business-related trip, but he is going to be coming back, and he'll be able to give us some insight on what he found out and what he saw and what he heard and conversations he had. And good evening, Terry and John. You guys popped up on the board.
Good evening.
How are you?
I didn't do any popping. I'm a queen. I make an entrance.
Yeah, well, such is life. I suppose I better just go ahead and do the disclaimer right now before we get into the meat of the call so that we don't forget about that. And, of course, I can't do it like Jesse does it. So I'm just going to tell everybody that if you came here looking for legal advice, you're in the wrong spot. Was that a yawn, Terry?
Sort of.
Yeah, okay. Well, we heard it. if you came here for legal advice, you're in the wrong spot. If you want to have some discussion and hear some discussion about some of the things that that we've got going on as far as legal cases go, you're in the right place. We can do that, but we don't give legal advice. We don't know what it is. We couldn't give it if our life depended on it. So if that's really what you're seeking, you're just plain in the wrong spot. So find yourself a bar-licensed attorney. They can give you legal advice. They're probably going to charge you an arm and a leg, maybe an arm and two legs, depending on who you talk to. But you're not going to find it here. So with that said, disclaimers out of the way. As I was saying just a few minutes ago, Jesse will not be with us. We have Larry, John, and Terry here tonight, as well as myself. This isn't my ghost speaking, although I was beginning to wonder last week. But Jesse, as far as I know, is probably on a plane on his way back from China, somewhere between the China and the U.S. I don't know how long the flight is, but I know it's got to be a long one because my flight back and forth to Vietnam many years ago from Seattle, Washington, was about 14 hours. So anyway, he'll be coming back, and I'm sure he'll have some interesting things to pass on to us in a couple weeks when he is on the call again. And it'll be interesting to get his viewpoint on what things were like while he was over there, what he saw, what he didn't see, possibly, that maybe he looked to see. But it should be a very interesting call. Myself, you know, we always start with good news. My good news is I have my internet back. 10:30 exactly, precisely yesterday morning, my internet went out, and I thought, oh, well, it should come back on. And it was 2 hours, and it wasn't on. It was 4 hours, and 6 hours, and 8 hours, and 10 hours. It finally came back on at 9:12 last night. I was out just short of 11 hours. It seems that AT&T had a fire in one of their facilities here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and their internet service was out to quite a few people. I did call their customer service yesterday and was told that the wait time was 1 hour. So I wasn't the only one calling. Needless to say, I didn't wait. They just said that there was a network outage. They were aware of it and working on it to resolve it. I did a little investigating today and found out that the cause of the problem was a fire at one of their facilities. So I made for kind of a screwed up day yesterday. But I'll tell you what, it's like when your microwave breaks. You don't realize how much you use it. You just use it without thinking. You know, you go to warm up a cup of tea or do something. Oh, wait, I can't do that. Well, I guess I'm going to have to put it in the pan on the stove. Well, when you don't have your internet and you're used to, well, I think I'll just click and get the customer service number. Well, wait a minute. No, I won't click and get the customer service number because I have no internet to get that. It's those things that we're so used to that we don't even think about. It's the mindless actions and stuff, but it was a great example of how much we use the internet, at least myself, and I think many other people are in large part the same way. I couldn't trade. I was blind to the market. Would have been a good trading day if I'd had the internet, but I didn't. That's life, but I got it back. I did manage to get the second and third episodes of Atlas Shrugged watched. I watch very few movies, but I recently, at Carrie's suggestion, after a conversation with her, ordered the trilogy of Atlas Shrugged, and I had watched the first one the night before. But I did get to watch those other two yesterday for lack of anything else to do while the internet was out. I would recommend anybody that has a chance and hasn't seen it, get it on Netflix. There's any number of places. It cost me $14 to my door on Amazon. It was $10 plus the $3.99 shipping. Very good. It's the subject matter is something that should really make people think about the world that we're in today, especially in the last 2 years, and with things that a certain progressive group of people would like to put into place. And that was based on a book that was written in 1957. So anyway, I did get to do that.
A woman who escaped the author was demonized for many years and accused of being a socialist and a communist, which is what the book is about, this country becoming, when the truth is she escaped that life. She was an immigrant. And so they just, as they do today, we see it every day, accuse you of the very thing they're doing. And that's what they did to her, and successfully blocked that movie from being produced and made for over 50 years. And then they couldn't stop it from being made because an independent billionaire stepped up and funded it. So then they tried to ban it from theaters, and successfully they did a pretty good job getting it banned in the theaters across the country. In most major theaters, but it is available on Netflix and on Amazon. That's where you got it, isn't it, Dave?
That's right. Yeah, I ordered it on Amazon. There's a bunch of them for sale there. And, it's a three-part deal. It's three movies. It's a trilogy. And like I said, it cost me $10 plus a $4 shipping. So I don't watch movies, but it was very interesting watching that, and a very interesting story, and the way it's a very in-your-face reminder of where we're going very rapidly in this country.
And where we are already.
Yeah, to a great degree.
Don't you think?
But yeah, I agree. But anyway, I would suggest if somebody had some time and were interested in learning about that and viewing it, by all means, go ahead. I will say I am feeling much better this week than I was last week, because I don't know how many people may have been aware, but there was a recall of some salmonella-tainted beef, ground beef, that got out to a lot of stores. Well, I got some of it, and I got sicker than a dog. And I'll tell you what, I had a miserable week last week. I'm better. I'm still not 100%, but I'm a lot better. But I had a miserable week between the diarrhea and stomach cramps. So,
Dave, the moral of that story is, when in doubt of the hamburger, toss it.
Well, the thing about it is I bought 8 pounds. I bought it at Sam's. It was a big tray, which I buy meat there all the time. And, of course, you know, they just have vendors that provide it to them. But I just – I take and divide it up into one-pound packages. You know, I'm single. I just make it into one-pound packages so I can, you know, make hamburger helper or spaghetti or whatever. And I made some hamburger helper. And I had some at the beginning of last week for dinner. And, of course, the rest goes in the refrigerator. Well, the next day I had a little bit of it for lunch. The next day a little bit of it for lunch. So I kept feeding it, and I started getting the cramps Monday night. And, boy, I tell you, by Wednesday, it was no fun. And I mean, you don't ever want to have a tangle with salmonella. If you haven't, please try and avoid it. It's in your best interest to do so. So that's just another experience. That's the first one I've ever had with it, and I hope it's the last one, because it was miserable. And
be
just
happy there's
that.
Only one person. One person
well,
in your household, and you're not fighting over bathrooms.
Oh, yeah. Well, I had to stay close to the bathroom. I actually had to not walk one day because I didn't want to be away from the bathroom for more than 40 minutes to be out on a walk. And I haven't walked for 2 days now because it has rained incessantly for 2 days. We have had 23 inches of rain in the last 6 weeks. And the previous 8 months, we only had 22 inches of rain. The first 8 months of the year, we had 22 inches. We're up to 23 point something now. And we're supposed to get another 2 inches by tomorrow. It just won't quit. So, I'm holed up here in the hole. So, it's been an interesting last 10 days to 2 weeks for me. So legal-wise, I don't have anything going other than I got a phone call from the court that I didn't need – the court clerk last week that I didn't need to attend the status conference that afternoon by phone. And I said, what status conference? And she said, case number so-and-so. And I said, well, that case, I filed a motion to dismiss. She says, yes, I have that. I said, besides that, I never got a notice. And I got a hold of the head court clerk to find out. And it turns out you may have heard me mention I have a really bad postal carrier replacement. My regular postal carrier is fantastic. He's a good personal friend. We've become very good friends. But he has a guy that replaced him. He's put 2 envelopes from the court, certified mail, in my mailbox with the green cards on them. Wouldn't bring them up to me, have me sign. He just puts the envelope in there with a green card on it. And then this time, it was certified mail. They sent a notice to me. And he put a label on it, unknown person, and sent it back to the court when my name's in the mailbox. So he's too lazy to do his job. So I'm going to go over and I'm going to have a meeting of the minds with the station manager over here as soon as I'm up to it and the rain quits. If that may be a month yet, but who knows. But anyway, that's the only thing I have going with the court. The next stuff with Midland is the next stuff that's going on with that is by November 5th. So that's just on hold. And we'll just go from there. Now, who of the other moderators has any good news or any updated news on cases?
Well, as of today, this is a week past due and still nothing filed. No answer. So, you know, I'll be a little patient here.
Well, give everybody context here. It's been 2 weeks. 2 weeks since we were on the call. What's transpired?
Yeah, well, after the court rules on a motion to dismiss and denies it, then the defendants have 14 days to file an answer. That 14 days passed. This is 21 days, still nothing filed. But I'm not going to make a move just yet.
Well, Terry, I want to tell you something. I want to tell you something from my previous experience, and I know you're saying because. But on two motions to dismiss, and then the second one being granted, and then an appeal at the circuit court that I won, and then it being kicked back to the to the local court with another motion to dismiss, which was denied, and then the court set things for trial without an answer, and it was at the pretrial conference, and I said, well, you know, there's no answer. I can't do anything without, and finally I got an answer, but it was really useless at that point. So you should motion. I know you're going to say, but.
Well, I was instructed by the court to wait for them to file the answer because we have that other little special local rule in regard to pro ses and their settlement assistance program, and then a separate ruling by the court to proceed. So the reason I said I wasn't going to make a move yet is because I know if I put in for a clerk's default too soon, they'll just say, oh, well, you know, it was just an oversight, blah, blah, blah. And the court's already not too happy about the ridiculous motion to dismiss in the first place that wasted so much of the court's time because it was so lengthy and irrelevant. And so I'm all for letting them piss off the court, right? And so I was going to give it another week. And if they still haven't filed anything, I will file a clerk's default. That's expected.
But obviously you're in good stead with the court.
Yeah.
Have you ever talked to the judicial assistant that's handling your case? The case handler?
No, my clerk talks to them. When I call the clerk and I have, you know, inquiries such as this, like I did with it, it's because of the way they handle pro ses. When I needed to talk to her about, you know, how many days do they have to file an answer? What can I go ahead with the 26F? Because it's vague in the local rules. She goes and talks to the clerks or the judge's assistant to get that answer and then relays it to me.
So there's no point in you tipping your hand to the clerk to say, hey, procedurally, what do I do at this point? Just to remind them.
Yeah. You know, I know there wouldn't be. Part of the problem is that the court is overwhelmed now with the number of cases that they have. It's a small court, and it's handling an enormous area. So I have to be really patient anyway. That's one of the reasons it took so long. And it's also part of the reason that the clerk or the court is not so overjoyed with Equifax right now and their lengthy, irrelevant motion to dismiss and the wasting of the court's time because they have precious little of it to spare. So I don't make waves and try to put pressure or even suggestion of it on the court. I'm playing the good guy, you know,
okay.
and following the rules exactly as the pro se, which they don't normally see.
Okay.
Just my court.
So, but I see what you're saying because, you're in a you know, totally different environment in your court situation there, but I can see what you're saying.
Yes,
that's ridiculous.
Not an emotion, but just to like contact the clerk and say, hey, by the way, they had 14 days. Now they're 21 days overdue. I don't want to litter the docket, but I just wanted to let someone know.
Well, yeah, when they're that far out, I probably will do that. You know, but right now they're a week overdue. So I'm not going to squeak yet.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Hurry up and wait. Yep, hurry up and wait.
Yeah. And then the other thing was, Dave, like I told you yesterday, the check came out today. And you always do one thing you can count on with these big companies like AT&T, Dish Network, or HughesNet in this case, it's the technician who comes to your house who's most likely going to tell you the truth. and I had a nice long conversation with that technician today. And he did switch me to a different satellite, as we discussed. And so far, it's great. But like he says, and you have to understand, he's a private contractor, and he has three counties, including this one, Cherokee, which is an enormous county. And it's all Appalachian Mountains, you know. It's all mountainous, and most of the HughesNet customers are up here. Why? Because we don't have any other choice, or we wouldn't be HughesNet customers, right? And he spends most of his time up here. Well, he too has HughesNet because why? He too has no choice. And he said, I wish all of our customers, the customers I have to deal with, were like you. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, Vocal. He said, you don't let them get away with this stuff. You make them send me out here over and over till they get it right. And he said, the problem is it's not going to get right because if I had a magic wand and I could just make good internet access for all of us up here, you don't think I'd fix mine first? I started laughing. And he said, I'll switch over to the other satellite, and it'll be good for a little while. Then you're going to be yelling at him again, and I'm going to be switching you back, and that's going to continue until the new satellite goes up sometime in early 2020, and it might be active and available by late 2020 or early 21. And he said, and then give it 6 months to be overloaded like these two. So that is the world. I mean, that's it. It's not the answer you. Right. It's not the answer you wish for, but it's the truth. And that's all I want. The truth. If it is what it is and I have to deal with it, it'll be frustrating, aggravating, and tick me off. But I know that that's what it is, so I have to deal with it. And every time it gets bad like that, he's right. I will make them send him out here to switch me back over to the other satellite. They know very well that they're overloaded. And there's only two satellites that my location can use because you have to have a line of sight. And because of the mountain and the trees and the fact that I'm like on the water and the trees aren't directly in front of the balcony, there's a line of sight for those two satellites. But nowhere else in the sky could he point it because of location. So for right now, that's solved. Then last night, I'm still chuckling. I caught the last few minutes of Tucker Carlson, and he was talking about this DNA test with Elizabeth Warren, and a couple of things he said just made me laugh, and I've just been chuckling about it. And every time I see his face today, it makes me laugh again. He called her Faka Jawiya, the chief founder of the Me Too movement. And then he mentioned that the DNA test did not use American Native Indian DNA. Instead, they used South American DNA, as in Aztec, Mayan, Inca, etc. And so then he said, that's not even it's not even on the same continent with Cherokee, you know. And so then he called her Fraudazuma. And I just thought, oh, my Lord, I'm looking forward to the 2020 election cycle. And I can just hear Trump calling her Faka Jawiya and Fraudazuma. So it was pretty funny. But that's been, oh, and it's raining, cats and dogs all day, Dave, so don't feel lonely. And that's where I am today.
I'm in games. Well, the political stuff is just, you know, it's coming from everywhere. I turned the TV on to watch the local news just to, you know, kind of get the weather and you know, get a little more detail on it and stuff. And the political ads, I had to sit here with the remote in my hand and mute everything all the time. So I'm real tired of all the political crap. So just don't need it. So who else has got some?
Well, I tell you what, I live up here in the Eastern Cherokee Nation, and I will say I took Haley to the big Cherokee Museum in Cherokee, North Carolina, 2 or 3 weeks ago. And if you ever get a chance to visit there, I highly recommend it because it was absolutely beautiful. It is so incredibly well laid out and designed, unlike any museum I've ever been through. And I noticed, actually Haley drew my attention to it as we were leaving. And we were driving around town, a small town, Cherokee. But we were driving around town, and she drew my attention to the fact that all the street signs, like if it says Main Street or Park Street or whatever, it's written in English. And then underneath the English word, it's written in the Cherokee alphabet, which I just thought was so cool, you know. But, I mean, that's the real Cherokee world there. Anyway, yeah. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I was just going to say, who else of our moderators got any good news? And if anybody else has got any, hit the one key on the keypad in your phone. That'll put you in the queue. We'll take your good news, and then we will get on to our Q&A. John, you got any good news for us?
Nothing's changed since last time.
Okay. Same old, same old. Larry, you got any money yet? I had Larry unmuted. Where did he go?
Seems to be a lot of same old, same old going around.
That yeah. time of year.
Yeah, we're all in waiting mode, you know. People start thinking, let's just wait this out until after Christmas, right?
Yeah. Well, again, for everybody that has joined us more recently here, Jesse is not with us tonight. As far as I know, he's very likely on a plane between China and the United States right now. He's been over in China for about 11 days. He's supposed to be back tomorrow, and it is a long flight. So if he isn't on the plane, he's got to be close to getting on it to be heading back here. It'll be interesting to hear what he's got to say about his visit there when we come back on in 2 weeks. So If anybody else has got any good news, hit the one key and the keypad in your phone. And if anybody's got Q&A, hit the one key on the keypad in your phone, and we will take your call and hopefully be able to answer your questions and have a little fun discussion. So let's go to 407. You are unmuted. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. This is Velva.
Hi, Velva. How are you?
I'm okay, I guess. Got a couple of things going on.
Well, that's good. That'll keep you out of trouble.
or get you into it.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a little of a both. I have two topics that I want to ask about. First is, how do I know if MRS BPO is a debt buyer or if they're representing the creditor? If they bought the debt or if they're
representing the creditor. I had a list that I sent out, and I believe it's on the website, of all of the debt buyers that are registered as debt buyers. Now, I haven't updated it in a while, but as of, three, 4 months ago, it was up to date. And I would check there first because that's the easy but then somebody asked me for it again, and I looked to see if there had been any changes, and there wasn't. But that's the easy route. You might just find them on the list, and that answers your question. But if you don't, that doesn't necessarily mean they're not. They still could be, but not registered yet.
Okay. Is it possible they are trying to collect for the original creditor?
Well, okay. Now, that too, sometimes you have to do some digging because I know that Midland and Portfolio, Sherman has their own subsidiaries they usually do it with, but even they will do it once in a while. They'll buy these portfolios, and then they'll take the cream off the top of the best that they think are, you know, the best of the accounts out of the portfolio to collect on themselves in-house. And then they'll hire outside third-party traditional debt collectors to collect on their behalf. And they always represent that they're collecting, like if the original account originally came from, say, Capital One or Citibank or whatever, then that collector will say they're collecting on behalf of Citibank, when in truth, they're collecting a alleged defaulted Citibank account on behalf of a big debt buyer. So that happens too, and it's more often than you think.
Okay.
Yeah, you just got to do a bunch of research, digging on who they are and what they do.
Right. Right. My other question tonight is I just discovered that Experian had reported that I filed a BK. They just posted this. And this happened in 2016, and I had them dismissed. And they're just now 2 years later, more than 2 years later, posting this, but did not mention they were dismissed. And I got very angry, and I actually was alerted. I was alerted by I have an account because I was a victim of identity theft that alerts me if something changes, or if somebody pulls my credit, or if something changes.
Yeah, a monitoring service.
Yes. So that service, I talked to them because I wanted to confirm. And they said, well, we think you should talk directly to Experian and file a dispute. And, yes, you can write as well, but if you'd like to, we'll go ahead and transfer you over. So I said, sure, I'll talk to them. And so I spoke to a customer rep on the dispute line to complain to Experian, and I asked, why are you posting this now? I said, it's been over 2 years. I said, why is there no mention of the dismissals? I said, this is very damaging. And, you know, I said, last year, over a year ago, I reported to them about the identity theft, and they were going to post an alert and contact the other two credit reporting agencies. And I discovered much later they did not do either. We asked the customer service who had asked to search this information on me. She said they used a third party to pull data. I said, so I'm a victim of identity theft, and Experian was alerted, and they hire an outside party, given my personal information and social security number, to continuously do search info on me. Is that correct? She didn't know what to say. I said, I didn't authorize this. I don't care if this is your business. It's wrong. I said, is there any surprise that my identity was stolen? Just how many people have access to my personal info and social security number, and I don't even know who they are? And so I went ahead and told her to start the dispute, and then I was going to send her proof that my cases were dismissed. And I'm working on the letter, and because I went to Pacer and made copies of the case summary, which is my proof, and then I went to annualcreditreport.com. I haven't done that real recently to get my current reports from Equifax and TransUnion. I didn't get the Experian. I wanted to wait 30 days and see if they've changed it. And the BK, I discovered after getting the TransUnion that the BK with dismissal was reported by TransUnion. So that was on there, and I was not alerted to that. So I complained to the insurance company. So I'm now waiting on all that, and I actually ordered my request through Equifax by phone because they never, for whatever reason, they never give it to you online. And I can't tell you. You know what? It is their fault. They ask these questions that don't apply to you.
Exactly.
And, or
yeah.
The company, what happened, let's say I had a Ford, I had my car financed a few years ago, right? Well, whoever the company was with, they've changed hands. So I don't recognize the names of these things, just like with the mortgage companies. I don't recognize the names because they've changed
right.
hands. So I can't answer. I don't know. So
that's very typical of Equifax. I've gotten mine, I've had to write and request it. You can't get it through annualcreditreport.com. It's a joke.
Right. So I did not want to write the request form, send a copy of my Social Security number through the mail, W-2s, which I don't have, et cetera, et cetera. And you can call an 800 number and talk to a recording, and you can request to get your report that way, and you don't have to send all this stuff out. And you don't have to wait for them to receive your letter. They already started.
Yeah, because they take their sweet time on that usually, too.
Yeah, it is. You're talking to a machine and whatever. And then what I also discovered that on the TransUnion report, that this information probably will not be removed until December of 2022, and I filed this in 2016.
Well,
does
it state that it was dismissed by the plaintiff or filer?
By me.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yes, it does. On TransUnion, it does.
Okay.
It does on TransUnion. And I just made copies looking for information on me. As simple as can be, if you just go to case summary, all of it's right there. You don't have to read through anything else. It's all right there. It's just your basic, you know, information, all you need. And I printed out copies of that, and I want to write a letter as well to go with it and to Experian. I'm just upset about the whole thing. I mean, I might as well have filed a regular BK if they're going to continue to report it for that many years. I mean, even in 7 years.
Well, usually, BK
is not
stays
really
on for 7 years.
Right.
Yeah.
And this being a dismissal, the dismissed case, they're treating it the same way. Is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
And so
well,
it does
that,
not look
that's
good
what they
much,
do.
You know?
That's what they do.
Well,
and the only way
wrong.
You can even possibly argue it is to go after them and make sure it's stated that you dismissed it, that it wasn't the court that dismissed it.
Right. And it actually says that on PACER. It actually says it on the
Yeah,
page
but
that
what
I
I'm saying
out.
As far as the information that's in the CRA file, because if they just say
right.
file bankruptcy, you know, whatever year, you know, 2016, then, you know, the people will automatically look at that and assume, well, she filed bankruptcy and that was all discharged, so, you know, people didn't get their money or anything. Whereas if it's marked as, you know, it was not discharged, but it was the bankruptcy was dismissed by the filer, that clarifies the
right.
records to a degree.
You know, when people start, for let's say I were to try to rent something or whatever, they
mm-hmm.
they don't look at things the same way we do. You know what I mean?
Oh,
it's,
I know.
This can be very damaging.
Of course.
Just as if I did
absolutely.
A rental. And
well, and that's
so I'm,
that's their business. That's their business is to damage you.
There you go.
Well, no, really,
you
that
know.
Is. You stop and think about it. They're a debt collector.
I am. And it's, I've really...
Dave is right.
Credit reporting agencies are worse than the debt collectors almost.
Well,
ever since they decided to be an arm of the collection industry, at least now they're honest about it. They're open about it. They've publicly admitted it. But they're not in the business to aid the financial arena and consumers. They are in business for debt collection and the banks alone, not
yeah,
consumers.
Yeah, force the consumer into paying.
Exactly.
Right, and I went on there. I read further on their on their sites, and they don't just use third party. They use all kinds of different parties and data collectors. So God knows how many people out there have all your information. You know?
You're right.
Well, if you just even look at the list on the CFPB of the, I think it's over 400 of them, credit reporting agencies, and you just start there, well, there's 400 companies right there who have all your stuff.
Oh, my God. You know, it's no wonder, and you're worrying about trying to protect all your information. The ones you need to worry about are the credit reporting agencies.
Well, it's the guard dogs you have to be concerned about, right?
There you go. Yep. You're right.
Who's policing the police?
Right.
We are. That's what we're here for.
Is there, you think there's anything in particular that I should say other than what I've already said to you guys tonight about this? Or just dispute it?
Well, I definitely would dispute it.
Yeah.
Me too.
Well,
yeah,
do your disputes, but keep after them.
Yeah. Yeah, I intend to. Okay, well, that's all I got for now. I appreciate it.
All righty. Thank you, dear. All right. We are going to go to our next caller with a hand up. 832, you are unmuted. Go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Pretty good.
Yeah, I'm doing all right. I got a couple questions. I called in, I want to say, maybe a few weeks ago, and I just sent out a debt validation letter to the debt buyer and the I guess law firm that was the third party debt collector for the debt buyer, and they sent me back a bill of sale. And they also sent like a credit card agreement that showed a date of 2016, and then It had
Hold on a second.
Okay.
You say a credit card agreement that showed a date of 2016. You mean
right.
a terms of service agreement? Because the credit card agreement is the one that would have your signature on it. Let's be clear on what you got.
Oh, okay.
The credit card agreement would be the contract, the initial application, and I bet you a dollar to a donut that they didn't send that to you. Am I correct or not?
No, you're correct. So you're saying that they send me just the terms and conditions of the agreement?
That's a terms and conditions agreement, and that could be for anything. And pertain to anybody.
Right.
It doesn't have my name on it.
Doesn't have any account number on it. There's no way that it relates to any that's tied to any alleged account that they say you might have had.
Yeah.
I could find one of those in the trash and send it to you.
Yeah, but this one was a little different because they had like the last four digits of the credit card number on each change. And it showed like, I want to say, it had like two additional numbers after it, I guess corresponding with each page of the terms and conditions.
Okay, yeah, but what about the rest of them? What about the rest of the numbers?
Okay.
See, that doesn't prove anything. So what they sent you is useless.
Okay.
From their standpoint. It's bogus BS. It's
but
the usual crap
it's
that
intended.
They try and snow you with.
Right. I was just going to use that very word. It's intended as a snow job to get you to believe, oh, yeah, well, here's your validation. That's our proof. No, it isn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Did they send copies of alleged statements from day one, zero balance to current balance, every single statement?
No, they didn't show. They only showed, I want to say, the year of 2017 and on 18. But I think I've had the account. Well, it was showing that the account was open since 94. Yeah, 1994.
Okay. Now tell me this. The oldest, did you look carefully at each one of those alleged statements? Notice my terminology here. The alleged statements that they sent you copies of.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you look at the dates of those? Did you look carefully to see if they're all consecutive? Did you look to see if the oldest one had a zero balance to start with, or whether it had a previous balance? Now, if
it
had,
had
a
previous
balance.
Balance,
yeah. Well, if it had a previous balance, where did that come from? So, how is that a complete accounting? It's
well,
not.
And you missed something, Dave.
Well, that's
he
just
said
part.
That terms
ahead,
of the terms of service agreement had
yes,
a date 2016, but now they're saying the account was opened in what 94. So how could that terms of service agreement have anything to do with that account?
Right.
Right. Remember,
you have a bushel basket full of problems with what they sent you.
Okay.
Capital One got in some really big trouble for that.
Yeah.
The Wheeler case, remember?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell them, you know, I'd send them a letter back. You know, unfortunately, what you sent me is inconclusive and is not a complete accounting, nor does the alleged terms of service apply to this alleged account. So try again.
Okay.
Because
exactly.
you did not provide you did not in any way, shape, or form provide validation of the debt as requested.
Okay. And that
that's
also
exactly
has to be
what I'd be
now.
Telling them. What's that?
No, I was asking, if I send that out, does that also have to be certified mail?
Yep, you want to send certified mail because when you correspond with these people like that, you know, if you end up going forward where they sue you and stuff, and you want to sue them, you need to have good documentation. You know, they can't when you send a certified mail, they can't pop up and say, "Well, we never got it." Well, the Postal Service said you did on May 22nd at 10:42 a.m. Because here's a Postal Service receipt for when they delivered it to you.
Okay.
That's how you deal with it.
Okay. I also forgot to mention the fact that they also sent me just a copy of the entity that was actually the copy of the case number in which that entity that I guess they may be representing that filed suit on me.
Well, now they...
Okay, I'm lost.
Yeah, you lost me on that. They filed suit against you?
No, not them per se. It's the dead body. They filed suit for me, but they were sending correspondence on behalf of the dead body.
Well, now you got me confused here.
Yeah.
You said they sent you. Who sent this legal paperwork to you? Which one of those entities? The dead buyer or the attorney?
It's the law firm. I don't know if it's the attorney because they didn't say any attorney's name.
It's the law firm. It's the law firm.
Okay, yes.
I mean, I sent
letters to the dead buyer and the law firm, but the law firm is the only one that, as of today, that has sent back correspondence.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay, so I'd send a letter back and tell them what they sent you is inconclusive, and if they've filed suit against you, you haven't been served yet, correct?
Yeah, I haven't been served yet.
Right, okay.
Right,
well,
and they didn't send you a copy of a judgment, so they didn't sue you before and you didn't know it.
Yeah.
No.
If I were in your shoes,
right,
I would be in the website studying beating credit cards, and the SummerSlam on how to write a lawsuit and get ready to write a federal lawsuit up against them. They've already violated the FTCPA.
Wait. Okay, but I'm a little confused. You're saying they violated the FDCPA?
Uh-huh.
By not verifying the debt? Because
Right. They have attempted to collect after you sent them a debt validation letter, and they haven't validated the debt.
Oh, okay. Because I was a little confused because I was reading some case law, and the case law that I read, it stated something that all the debt collector had to do was just give an amount and the name of the original creditor, and that was verification.
That's verification, not validation.
No.
Oh.
Were you possibly reading something related to Chaudhry versus Galarizzo? Because that's been long ago debunked as BS, the way they have tried to use that. They've used that for years, trying to say that's all they had to do. Well, no, the courts have clearly indicated they have to provide more than that.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that for me. Well, I think that's all the questions that I have today, man. Thank you guys for helping. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
All right, have a good one.
All right, you too. Okay. We're going to go here. If anybody has got questions for us, you go ahead and hit the one key on the keypad on your phone. That's going to put you in the queue. We're going to go to 781. You are unmuted for your question. Go ahead.
Good evening. This is John up in Massachusetts. Good question. I filed a ECPA against a local entity that has made several calls. I'm on the do not call registry. There have been robocalls as well. And I sent them a demand letter, and then they didn't answer it, so I filed small claims for the amount, which is well under $7,000. And I received a list from attorney that they've moved it to big court, which is, I call it big court.
The federal court.
Yeah, the federal court. And my question is, does the allegations of this of the TCPA hold in or throughout the whatever the hearing is and how we proceed in the federal court?
Well, usually we bring TCPA claims, at least I do, in federal court as opposed to small claims. It can
right.
be brought in either court, and they can remove it.
Right, under Rule 4, I guess that's the – probably the Massachusetts.
Yeah. Well,
it's a federal statute.
Pardon me?
Yeah.
Yeah, they can move it.
I said it is a federal statute.
TCPA is. I also filed it under the Massachusetts 1C. That's the Massachusetts version of the TCPA.
Yeah, they can move the state law right up to federal with it.
Because it
yeah,
isn't
they,
TCPA.
Yeah,
so
the
being,
federal. Well, hang on a second. The
sure.
the state law claim that you made, was that for what?
Violations of 115C, the Telephone Solicitations Act, as they refer to
oh,
it.
Oh, okay. okay. Yeah,
so
they can take supplemental jurisdiction over state law claims. That's up to the court to do so.
Okay. So he's motioned for a hearing. Now, do I know that the hearing has been accepted or not? Or does he motion, therefore it's been accepted?
Well,
because he
moved for a hearing for what?
For it to be heard in the federal court, the district court.
Well, no, wait a minute. You don't. If they move it to federal court, if they remove it, as it's called, to federal court,
exactly.
then it just goes forward in federal court following the procedures. But
right.
what specific motion did he file or just a motion to transfer or to remove to federal court?
Yeah. Give me a minute. I'm going to pull it out since I put it back in the file for that case.
You got to look at the terminology
right.
on these motions so that you know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay. Tell me about your food poisoning for just a second. I had it once. It was really horrible. While I pull it out, it was pits. Time in my life.
Don't, Dave.
Sorry.
Just don't ever go there, anybody. Please don't get salmonella poisoning. Oh, man, I'm telling you.
Yes, this person's a bad Chinese restaurant, and every time I see the ones, aren't highly populated,
well,
I don't go into them. Just because they're open late at night.
Well, the thing that was really helpful to me is I would not have known what was going on if I had not gotten a letter in the mail from Sam's real quick saying, you recently bought some hamburger. Here's a list of the various things. There's been a recall because of salmonella. And, any of the meat that you have please discard, do not consume it, and contact Sam's for a refund on your purchase.
Yeah.
Well, I got that later last week after I was already sick.
Yeah.
And I went up to Sam's, I think I went up there Sunday. I didn't feel like, I couldn't go anywhere last week. Boy, I wasn't going to be away from the bathroom for more than 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah, the The pain, the internal pain is really bad, and the cramping and everything.
Oh, yeah, the cramping and the diarrhea was just unreal.
Yeah.
And it just kept it going. I mean, it just kept going and going and going and going. But anyway,
okay.
Yeah, don't ever
so
do
have,
salmonella, anybody, please.
Don't take that off the menu. All right, so this is defendant's motion to transfer a case. Now comes defendant in the above
okay.
caption matter.
Yeah,
this
that's
is
just moving it to federal court.
Okay, so, and he states the rule 4A, for the reason the complexity of the issues raised in the plaintiff's complaint requires utilization of discovery. So they're looking for my records. But it's interesting to me that for $1,000, which is what I'm alleging they're claiming for, that they're
hiring. Oh, good
hiring
grief. You sued them for $1,000 and they spent $400 to move it to federal court?
Well, actually, it was $1,500. For
yeah, but nevertheless.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Wow.
So I'm going in with a phone that has the call on it. It was also a voicemail. She says, you know, we want to buy your foreclosed house if you're being, which I'm not. And would you like to call them back? And I said, was that a robocall? Do you call people looking for houses? She said, oh, yeah, we're using a robocall system. It really works great. I said, thanks very much. I've got two calls from you. And I just said, I don't think I'm going to be selling my house. So, yes, they're moving it. So this says they're just moving it to federal court, and then what?
Yeah. Then the dance starts.
Yep.
I don't know how extensive your complaint was in the small claims court. When I filed in small claims court here on my Midland stuff, the claims – The lawsuit is extremely rudimentary. It's not really even laid out like a regular lawsuit. You may have to replead, depending on what the rules are there. You may have to replead and write it up more extensive and give more details. I don't know. You'll have to find that out from the court. If it's required, the court will tell you.
Mm.
But basically what's going to happen is your case is going to go forward. They're going to have to answer it. Then what you do is you start the dance after that. Then the court will say, okay, well, you know, you got to do a 26F and get all your stuff ready to go, do a joint report, and then you can do your discovery after that's done, do your disclosures, I mean, just like any other federal case.
Yeah, so I will write up a case as if I'm starting a case with captions and double spacing and all the one sentence.
How rudimentary was the small claims case? Was it very just like
I said they violated the two laws because I've been on a do not call list for 4 years, and they used a robocall method.
Okay.
That was it. I also mentioned it. Maybe why they did this. This is very interesting. That in Massachusetts, the Attorney General, under the 159C, which is telephone communications, can institute a $1,500 lawsuit per call if the person is over 65 years of age, and which I am. So I said, oh, that's very interesting. And I naively stated in my demand letter that I was looking for three times the original call, and then the three times, which came three times the 1,500 equals 6,000, because I was over 65 years old. And then I talked to an attorney on another TCPA case, and she said, I believe that's only the Attorney General that can bring that. And I said, I think you're right. I'll settle for the $1,500 on this other case. And they agreed to it in a heartbeat. But I believe that this attorney may be looking for the fact that the original notice to them was for $6,000. And then when they didn't answer it, I filed the small claims only demanding $1,500.
Uh-huh.
So he may be messing with me because I'm a pro se and thinking I'm going to whack this guy around in court. I don't know why they're doing that.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's
hard to tell. That might be, but it just to me, if you're talking $1,500, why would they spend $400 on filing fees and then pay the lawyer, why don't they just talk to you and say, here's $1,500, or will you take a grand to go away or something?
I think they're sick.
They've already spent more than that.
Pardon me?
I said they've already spent more than that in lawyers.
Yeah, between the filing fee and
defender.
The lawyers, they got more than that.
Yeah, well, this could be just, you know, somebody's brother-in-law, too. How do I know? You know, that said, I'll take care of that kid. Nobody's going to come after my family member who runs this buying foreclosure houses.
Yeah. Well,
little,
whatever.
Small business. So I'll go in and I'll just file the, I'm as Dr. Graves said, I do the, you know, I'm in this program.
Oh, okay. Jurisdiction.
So I will file, and as he says, and those little pictures in his videos there, you know, prepare, and show up with
that. Yeah, and don't forget your axe.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I know.
All right, now keep in mind, they've removed it to federal court.
Yeah.
The next step is they need to answer. Now, it probably would be good for you to amend your pleadings to conform to the federal pleading rules.
Yeah, it's good advice.
So go ahead and do that, and then file your amended complaint into the docket.
So it's an amended complaint onto my small claims.
Well, no.
That's what it is, or is
it's going to be? It's going to be in federal court.
Yeah.
Okay, they've removed it to federal court, so you're going to file an amended complaint.
Okay.
Into the federal court. Into the federal docket, because that's where you're operating now. It's no longer in the state court.
Yep.
Okay. So write up your like you're writing up a lawsuit, only your title on it is going to be First Amended Complaint for Violations of the Telephone Consumer Protection Act in Massachusetts, whatever. And then,
okay.
You know, you gotta have it broken down, you know, your parties and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Don't forget your jurisdiction and all that.
Right. Yeah.
It's
and,
just
a
more formal process in federal court
right.
than in the small claims.
Yeah. It struck me as well why they're for $1,500 they're going there instead of saying, you know, maybe take $800 and I probably would have, you know.
Yeah. Well, from a monetary standpoint, it doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, there's some of these people, the things that they do, they don't make any sense. But, you know, as long as you understand what the procedure is, you know, you're coming here getting the answer so you understand, you know, what's next. And, you know, they want to do discovery, and they're saying, you know, they need discovery. Okay, well, you know, discovery works two ways. But, you know, you can put an affidavit in that you talked to so-and-so and such, and they told you blatantly up front, you know, well, yeah, we use a robo-dialer or exactly whatever they said, and it works really good.
Did I bring that affidavit with the complaint and be ready to hand it to the
court? No, I wouldn't. No, that's for later. That's for later. If you get farther down in the suit. That's not for your complaint. Your complaint always, and this is for everybody's benefit, a complaint is what's known as a notice pleading. That's putting the party that you're suing on notice and telling them, okay, this is my claim against you. This is what I'm saying you did wrong. So that you know how to defend my claim against you. That's all it is. Always keep in mind that's the purpose of it. You can't just make a bunch of conclusory statements. You got to put some facts in there. You know, on such and such a date, such and such happened, and then this happened, then this happened. In other words, you know, think in your mind as far as you're painting a picture for the other side, but more so actually for the court. So when the court reads it, the court can go, oh, I see. He's saying, yeah, I see the picture of what he's saying happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way you want to think about it. So when you read your complaint, And it's a good idea to have someone else that doesn't know your situation or knows little about it. Read it when you get done. Say, does that make sense to you? You know, maybe you don't know legal stuff, but I mean, in reading that, can you kind of get an idea what happened? Or, you know,
sure.
They may come back and say, I followed it up to here, but then I got lost. What are you talking about here? You know,
it's not that complex. So, but I understand your point because Dr. Graves says, you know, rehearse this stuff till you're blue in the face and have people read it to them and see what they say, you know.
Right, right. Another pair of eyes, another mind that looks at it. And just, I mean, from a simplistic standpoint, do you understand what I'm saying here? Because if they don't understand it, there's probably a fair chance the court isn't going to either.
No, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. So, you know, we want to make sure that we get it right the first time because doing that helps eliminate or alleviate the possibilities to a big degree of getting a motion to dismiss to have to deal with. And then, you know, you got to go through the arguments with that and all that kind of stuff and everything. If you can put a good enough pleading before the court, it just pretty much prevents a motion to dismiss in many cases. Not all. You know, sometimes you get a motion to dismiss for anything.
Of course. So.
Yeah, and to Dave's point, about using that third pair of eyes, everybody should always remember that most judges in most courts, unless it's a very busy court and gets a lot of consumer law cases, most of your judges are not going to know anywhere near what you know about specific statutes like the TCPA, FCRA, they'll probably know a little more about FDCPA because it's been litigated a lot more. But if the person you're reading it to, it doesn't make sense to, you can pretty much count on it won't make that much sense to the judge because the judge doesn't have a whole lot more context than that person you're reading to because they deal with hundreds of different statutes, hundreds of different kinds of cases, and chances are they may have had one or two TCPA cases or none in the past.
Oh, I believe that. I mean, I looked into the library with the clerk, and we're looking for TCPA stuff, and there's a scarce minimum in Massachusetts of cases.
Exactly.
Nothing.
Well, and especially TCPA because it's not been around as long as FDCPA and FCRA. And FCRA was largely ignored until, the last 6-7 years, right, Dave?
Yeah, pretty much.
I remember your first programs on that. I still have to dive back into that one thing at a time for me. Now, do you advise in the complaint that I would be mentioning any appellate cases, or is that
you don't get into that kind of stuff in the pleading stage. Remember, it's a notice pleading. All you're doing is telling the court, you're letting the other side know, hey, this is my complaint against you. This is what happened. This is what you did that was a violation. And then the court looks at it and says, oh, yeah, we understand that. Okay, the case goes forward.
Yeah.
You're not making any arguments. You're not trying to prove your case. Proving your case comes later, not at the pleading stage.
So I walk in, there's a hearing. They say they're going to say to one or two of us what's going on.
You aren't
going to
have a hearing over this.
Well, they motion.
Have a hearing.
Defendant's motion to transfer case, and then it says to transfer the case to the docket for this such and such reason. Bear with me for a minute. Go back to the salmonella. Please take notice of the undersigned. Okay. Relative to the above-mentioned caption, close, kindly find defendant's motion to transfer. I guess you're right. They've only motioned for transfer.
Right, right. Yeah, you don't have a hearing at that point in time.
But I should show
they
up.
They can do that. No, you don't have to show up. This is a paperwork.
Please mark motion for hearing Wednesday, October 24th, next Wednesday.
Well,
they're just telling me
that.
Please mark said motion for hearing on Wednesday, March or October 24th. Thank you for your attention in this manner. This is to Dear Sir or Madam, R.E. Me, John versus Apex Investments. Attention small claims, Kirk. So this is just to the clerk, that letter. But there's going to be, he's doing his due diligence and letting everybody know. And he sent me a copy of Now Comes Defendant Apex Investments in the above captioned matter. Respectfully moves this honorable court to transfer the case to the civil docket for the following reasons: discovery, complexity of issues.
Oh, no. Wait a minute.
Okay.
You're saying they requested moving it to the civil docket.
Correct, for the following reason.
That doesn't necessarily mean federal court.
It says District Court of Massachusetts. It's my local district court.
Well, you need to look at your structure of your courts there. You may have state district courts that are above your small claims courts, and that's where they're moving it to, as opposed to federal court.
Yeah, there are. There are two courts. There's one up is where the criminals go, says the guy in the court.
Well, but it's okay. The titling, it's the of the the naming of the courts. It's sounding to me like they're wanting to move it just to the next level up in state, as opposed to federal.
No, I think you're right. I think you used federal, and I didn't question it. So they're just moving it to the court, and they're sending me notice that they've noticed the court that they want to move it there per a motion.
Well, yeah. That if they're just moving it to an upper-level state court.
Find defendant's motion.
See, your small claims is very informal. I mean, that's your real low level. And a lot of your states don't allow discovery in the small claims courts. And you said that one of the reasons they wanted to move it was discovery would be necessary, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's
okay.
What they're saying.
Yeah, the court that they're saying to move it to is what, Massachusetts District Court?
Massachusetts District Courts of Massachusetts, Cambridge District.
There you go. Okay, then you're not going to federal. That's just going to the next, evidently, level up in your state court system. Whole different ballgame.
All right. So civil rules of civil procedure is not for federal that I'm going to read on this.
Right. You're going to be needing to study the Massachusetts rules of civil procedure because you're going to be in the District Court of Massachusetts.
Yeah, which I'm about a quarter of the way through. It's long and with all the annotations by the editors and so forth.
Well, I'm glad we got that straightened out. I mean,
yeah, thank you.
that's a big difference.
Every time I think of the federal court, I remember seeing a little guy from New Hampshire was on the federal court on a foreclosure case, and I went and had lunch with him for about a minute. Anyway, so what's happening? This is a motion to transfer, and I'm just sitting pretty till they notice me. I mean, I need to get my notice.
Well,
getting to
okay. They put that in. They're putting that into the small claims court, right?
I don't know. I mean, I went to small claims court, and boom, out comes this thing from this attorney saying he's requesting.
Well, you say you went to small claims court. I mean, you filed in small claims court. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. You filed in small claims court. You got this paperwork in the mail, I'm assuming?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So the motion to remove to Massachusetts District Court, what is the caption at the top of it? Is the caption to the small claims court?
I'm going to read right from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts District Courts of Massachusetts. Then Middlesex SS on one side, Cambridge District Court on the other side, and then the plaintiff is me, and then the defendant. And then the title, Defendant's Motion to Transfer Case. Now comes who wants to transfer the case to civil docket. Sounds like I'm going to have to go into that court and into the clerk and say,
well,
or somebody.
Yeah, I think, you know, if it's not too much trouble, I would clarify it with them, but I think that's a motion that's been put into the clerk.
And they're going to hear it and then get back to me and say, no, he's right or he's wrong, or they're going to...
Well, no, I mean, it's a matter of you could argue the transfer, but it probably wouldn't do you any good.
Yeah. And who would I be arguing with? Do I go to...
Well, you'd argue with the defendant. I mean, remember, your argument is always with the defendant.
Yeah, of course.
You'd be saying, no, I don't want it in that court. I want it to stay in small claims court. Well, they're going to say, well, we want it up there because discovery is going to be necessary.
Yeah. So, and then they give that, please take notice that the undersigned will present for hearing within defendant's motion to transfer case before the district court department of the trial court, Holden in Cambridge, Massachusetts, on Wednesday, October 24th. That confuses me. I don't know whether I'm supposed to show up or whether they're going to do some hearings.
You might want to
be hanging around or what?
Is it fairly easy for you to be there?
No problem. 10 minutes, I'm over there.
Oh, okay. I think if I were in your position, I'd probably go just so I could be there and, you know, if there's anything I needed to say, say it, but learn a little about the court and the procedure and the people.
So they'll get up and they'll mention my name and the plaintiffs, and I'll be sitting there and they won't even know that.
Yeah, so and so versus so and so. Yeah, a motion for removal to such and such.
And if the guy says, the judge says, yeah, that's fine, we'll do that, what would be the next move? They're going to contact me and say, plead your case?
Well, then no, the court is going to issue an order moving the case.
Mm-hmm.
And then your case will proceed forward through the normal procedures in that District of Massachusetts court.
And that's why
you need to be familiar with the rules of civil procedure for that court.
Okay. So I'll be – at that point it would go onto a docket and I would just wait until –
That would just be starting things.
Okay.
Not like, oh, my God, I got to take all my evidence and be ready for trial. No. You're just literally that's just saying, hey, wait a minute. This guy filed over here. We want it over there. So now you're going to be over there. And that's just the process of moving it over there. And then you start the dance over there instead of over here. That's all.
Yeah.
That's
and
what
he's
you're
willing
dealing
to drill his gobbledygook to do that for.
Well, and the other thing is, while you're there, stop and think about this. Sometimes opportunity knocks real easily. If you're there and the attorney's there, well, you can have a conversation with them about settlement. You know, I really don't understand why you want to go through all of this.
Right.
Wouldn't it be easier just to settle this? You know.
Yep.
What would your client be willing to do to settle this, just so we don't have to, you know, fiddle around with this anymore?
Yeah, you're already going to make some money on it.
Right.
And better to see him there. Obviously, I do want to go to the court and see how it works a little bit. And rather than call the attorney on the phone and say, hey, Roger, what's going on? Why are you doing this?
Well, you don't ever want to call them up and say, why are you doing this? You know, it's obvious why they're doing it. They want it where they can do some discovery. But the point is, you show up at court and – you know, maybe the guy, the attorney's around there saying, you know, are you Joe Blow on this suit? Well, are you Richard or whatever your name is? Oh, okay. Well, you know, let's discuss this before we go before the court. You know, I don't understand exactly what it is you're doing, but this is a pretty negligible amount to be doing a big dance in court, you know, what would your client be willing to offer to settle this and just get it done right now?
Yep.
If we can reach the settlement, we can just say, forget this whole thing right now.
No, I've done it over the phone and emails in some 93A cases against insurance companies for fraudulent stuff. And, you know, the emails are as pleasant as can be. And the phone conversation that I had with an attorney on a TCPA recently was as pleasant as could be. She said, yeah,
well, a lot of times you can do that, but it's a matter of just, you know, having the opportunity. And sometimes when they're doing something like that, if they got to show up in court, okay, well, excuse me, the lawyer is going to make some money for doing the paperwork and showing up in court. And then if you're there to talk to them and say, well, look, you know, maybe we can make this thing go away for, you know, $1,200.
Sure.
You never make the first offer. What would your client be willing to offer to settle this?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, but you might be able to wrap it up right there.
Yeah, good. Okay, I think that clears it up. I'm back to Jurisdictionary to review it all again.
All right,
guys. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
All right, you bet. Take care.
Take good
luck on that. Let us know what happens.
I will be back next week. Yep.
Okay. All right.
How do I unmute?
I'll mute you.
Okay, thanks.
Uh-huh. Okay. We're going to see. Well, I don't see another hand up here, you know. If somebody has got a question, hit the one key on the keypad in your phone, because if you don't, we're going to go ahead and wrap things up tonight, because if we don't have questions where we can discuss things and help people out, then we'll call it a night. I mean, you know, I've got some other things that I want to do, and I'm going to get to bed early tonight again. I'm trying to get as much sleep as I can, because I've had some real strange nights the last week with being sick. And weird dreams, wake up in the middle of the night with my stomach just squeaking and growling and churning and gurgling and doing all sorts of strange things, like there was a bunch of critters loose in there. But when you get food poisoning, sometimes that can happen. Well, I don't see anybody else sticking a hand up in the air, so I guess we're going to wrap it up there. 2 weeks from tonight will be the next call. But don't forget, John is going to be doing a webinar, I believe, tomorrow. John, you want to give us a quick recap of what you're going to be covering?
Protecting your money.
There we go. John's expertise right there, protecting your money. 3 o'clock Eastern tomorrow afternoon for all the members. And Thursday night, of course, Terry does a Wednesday call. She doesn't know how to do it on Wednesdays. She just got real confused, but she does it on Thursday nights now. If you're not on her email list, send an email to queensongbird@gmail.com, and she will send a call information reminder to you. Please copy that information down, because she doesn't send them out repeatedly every week. So when you get that information for the first time, capture it, put it away. But her call is at 8 o'clock Eastern, Thursday evening. And then, of course, for all the members, through the weekend and all the time, 7 days a week, the forum is right there. All you got to do is log in, go to the proper area of the forum, post your question, and we'll get the answers back to you. Jesse will be back 2 weeks from tonight, and he'll be able to tell us about his trip to China. I'm really interested to hear some of his comments about his visit there. Excuse me. And I hope everybody has a great weekend, and we will talk to you either tomorrow afternoon on John's webinar or on Terry's call Thursday night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, all.
Good night.